Good evening. We're doing in Yaakov. We're up to page Kuftet Vav. The Mishnah. We're beginning the 16th chapter of Shabbat. The Mishnah says, "Kol kitvei hakodesh matzilin otan min hadleika." Holy writings, Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim. Any holy writings, so we save them from a fire on Shabbos. We're going to see later on that the Mishnah is talking about a mavui sheino mifulash. Let's go off on a tangent for a minute and understand how their houses were built. Okay, this is a basic intro to Shas. Rashi, in Tractate Sukkah, explains things that he doesn't explain in other places in Shas. I think, my little thesis, I postulate that Rashi intended for Sukkah to be the first tractate that children learn. Because he explains things in Tractate Sukkah that he doesn't explain in other places in Shas. So I think, why did he do that? Could be he was giving the basis. So when you learn later, you'll understand. So in Tractate Sukkah, Rashi spells this out. Parts of this also appear in Erevin and in other places. So what did things look like in the days of the Mishnah? You had over here a Rishut Arabim, public domain, which might have been a Suratia or a Platia. It was some type of main thoroughfare where you had 600,000 men on a daily basis going through that public place. And it was 16 amos wide. 16 amos is like 32 feet. I mean, we're talking about a big street. Okay? So, very wide. And people go through here, and you have wagons that go through here, and cattle, and at the same time, you have on the sides, you have merchants with their wares. Look at the Kardu, okay? So the Kardu is wide, and a lot of it is underground still, right? So that's an idea of what a public marketplace looked like. Now, coming off of the Rishut HaRabim, you would have a side street called a Mavui. Okay? Now, if that mavui connected to public domains, so it didn't really dead end, that's called a mavui mifolash. That it's a street that actually goes through. It connects on two sides to another street. It's open on both ends. And then you have a mavui sheino mifulash. Okay, so here you have a little mavui, a dead end, mavui sheino mifulash, that doesn't go out to the public domain. So on your Rishut HaRabim, you constantly had these little mevaot mavui. Now, around every mavui, you had a chatzer, you had a yard, okay? And around every chatzer, you had, this was a big yard, a shared yard, and around the chatzer, you had houses. Okay? So, your chatzer has maybe 10, 15, 20 houses around the chatzer. So, our mavui is going to have many chatzerot, right? And each chatzer is going to have many people who live there. Okay? So, our chatzer, this is our chatzer, our mavui has many chatzerot. Okay? So, this is the way things look like in the days of the Mishnah and the Gemara. So,
not in Israel.
When I have this mavui, sheino mefulash, in Israel also, sure in Israel.
In Israel, you still have today. You have here, even here in Givat Shaul, you have Chatzerot. You go around the corner from here. On your left side, you have a street called Gat Street. And the first house over there is a courtyard that has houses there. And there are a few more like that in Givat Shaul, where there's a courtyard and houses that really go around it. And there are different people who live there, and they have a shared yard in the middle. If you go to the old city, so there's a Chatzer right as you come down James Street on your right side. If you're headed towards the Kotel, there's an old Chatzer, and they show you the houses that were there. Yeah, this is the way it was until not so long ago, even in Israel. So if you have a Mavui Sheino Mefulash, it's a dead-end street. Technically, it's private domain. There are very few people. It's closed off on all the sides except for one side. So our Mishnah is describing where you're going to take things out of your house into the Mavui Sheino Mefulash. You're not taking it into your Chatzer. That's one type of private domain. You're taking it into the Mavui Sheino Mefulash, into your dead-end street. Dead end, a no mefulash, it doesn't go all the way through. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. So, coming back to our Mishnah. So, the Mishnah says, Kol kitvei HaKodesh, all the different holy writings, Metzilin otan min hadleka, we save them from the fire. We save them from the fire. Ben shekorin bahem, ben shein korin bahem. It doesn't matter if we read them in shul that Shabbos, like the books of prophets that we read from in shul, or ein korin bahem. That's the writings. You don't read in shul. There's no public reading of Daniel. There's no public reading of Tehillim, of Psalms. So even if no one's reading them this Shabbos, I'm still allowed to take them out, to take them away from the fire, because they are holy writings. There's another interpretation here, and that is that the sages forbade reading certain works on Shabbos. Chazal wanted to make sure that people learn Torah on Shabbos. So what's the best way to do that? Make sure they don't read books of Torah on Shabbos. What? Start again. Chazal wanted to make sure people learn Torah on Shabbos. But the Torah people had to learn on Shabbos was the laws of Shabbat, the laws of commerce, the laws of Pesach that's coming up now. People had to learn the laws of leading their lives properly. The average person was spending his day working. How's he going to know that after he makes Kiddush, he has to wash his hands before he eats bread? How's he going to know that at the end of the meal, if he's not clean, he should wash his hands before he does benching? So the one time that people got educated was Shabbat afternoon. People would come to shul, the rabbi would give a long 3-hour drasha. The drasha would be full with stories, and it was a special talent to be able to weave all these stories and keep teaching laws, halachot, with the stories, so that people would be captivated on one hand and learn the laws they need to on the other hand. And they kept going back and forth, the stories and halachot, and stories and halachot, and it was a real... a really difficult thing to do. The Gemara says in Tractate Baba Kama, the Gemara brings an interesting story. The Gemara tells us, where's the Gemara story? The Gemara brings the following story. Rav Dimi came from the city of Narda to do business, to sell his dry figs. When he came, the rabbi Rava sent a student, Rav Ida bar Abba. He said to him, go see if he's a real Talmud Chacham. If he is, then notify in the market that everyone has to close their store and let him sell off his dry figs. After he finishes selling, they could reopen their stores. So if he's a real big Talmud Chacham, then that's called, we give preferential treatment, and we allow him to do his business. That's part of the way they used to support the learned people back then. So he went over to him, and he said, if a cow eats a basket, and the basket comes out whole in its excrement, then is that basket considered a new creation or not? If that basket was defiled before the cow swallowed the basket, does it remain defiled, or do we say after it went through the whole digestive tract of the cow, even if it came out whole, it's a new basket and it's no longer defiled? What's the halacha? So he thought for a minute and he said, I don't know. So Rav Ida Bar Abba laughed at him and tapped him on the shoe like he was some common folk. And he said, ha, okay, never mind. You could go do business like everyone else. So he said, are you Rava? I heard there was a big rabbi in this city named Rava. So he said to him, me? The difference between me and Rava is huge. I'm not Rava. Rava's my rabbi. But now you can go around telling everyone that your rabbi's rabbi is Rava. Meaning he was telling him, I'm your rabbi though. I know more than you. And he walked away laughing. So Rav Dimi from the city of Narda tried selling his dried figs. And he didn't succeed. And they rotted and he lost his business. So he went to Rav Yosef, who was chief rabbi at the time. And he said to Rav Yosef, you see what they did to me? So they not only didn't help me, they made fun of me. They treated me as though I know nothing. So Rav Yosef said, "The Hashem who avenged the pain of the king of Edom, who was a non-Jew, and didn't wait to avenge his pain, should avenge your pain." And boom, Rav Ida Bar Abba dropped dead. So the Gemara says, when Rav Yosef heard that, he said, oh no, I killed Rav Ida Bar Abba. And then the Gemara says, a long list of rabbis, where each rabbi said, I killed Rav Ida Bar Abba. And the Gemara brings, one of the people who said it was the rabbi who was responsible for giving the speeches on Shabbos. What was his story? What was his story? I think Rav Ida Bar Abba said a line to him that offended him. And he also said to him something to the effect he should drop dead. And then when he said it, no, it went differently. The rabbi who was responsible for giving the speeches on Shabbos was appointed when Rav Ida was away from town. And when Rav Ida came back, so the rabbi didn't want to give the speech without him. So every time before he'd give the speech, he would ask Rav Ida Bar Abba, I'm going to tell you the speech and you tell me if it's right. So this way it was a way of showing him respect, that he'd ask Rav Ida to go over the speech and then he'd give the speech. And then that one Shabbos, when this whole story happened, so Rav Ida Bar Abba didn't show up. And the student said, Rabbi, we're all waiting for your speech. It's Shabbos afternoon. It's time to give the speech. And he said, and I'm waiting to see, because I think Rav Ida dropped dead if he didn't show up. And then they came in and gave word, Rav Ida dropped dead. So the Gemara gives a list of four or five rabbis, the first one being Rav Yosef, who said, oh no, we killed Rav Ida. Each one thought they were the ones who were at fault. And they all started repenting, saying, what did we do? We caused them to die. Meaning there were quite a few people who gave him a sharp line. But in that Gemara we see that they appointed one of the leading sages to be the one to give the speech Shabbos afternoon. The Shabbos afternoon speech required a tremendous amount of skill to be able to make it so exciting that people would come and yet give a tremendous amount of information. So a big rabbi like Rav Ida Bar Abba was supposed to be the one to give the speech. He was just away when they appointed the other one who gave the speech. So coming back to here. So there were books that the rabbi said, no reading those books on Shabbos. That's halacha in Shulchan Aruch also. That Shabbos afternoon, you're not supposed to learn the stories of Eov, of Daniel. Now we say you're not supposed to learn them Shabbat afternoon. Why not? Because they're very interesting books, and you're going to start reading them, and then you're never going to show up to shul that afternoon. You're going to be captivated by the book. You're going to sit there and try to figure out when's Mashiach coming, right? So when we learned Daniel here, it was the only time this year that students said, Rabbi, go on another half hour. Keep going. Don't stop. Right? So you see how the book of Daniel captured people's interest. So Chazal said, there are books that we don't let you read Shabbos afternoon. Learn them any other time. Because Shabbat afternoon is the time that people would learn the halachot that would carry them the whole week through. Now, I want to go on a slight tangent. You guys today are in a world where you learn Torah in yeshiva, and that's great. And if you could stay connected to yeshiva, that's great. And if you have a shir you go to every day, that's also great. And that's the way it should be. It should be that you're connected to a shul or a yeshiva, you have a chavruta, and you learn every day. You make sure to learn right after davening, or you learn at night, there's a steady shir you go to. However, sometimes people find themselves with a job that they have to leave very early. And they get home, they don't have the energies to learn. It's unfortunate, but sometimes people find themselves in situations where throughout the week they barely get to learn. And if you do find yourself in that unfortunate state, you have to realize that your time is Shabbos. That means it's time to learn with the kids, and it's time to learn yourself. And it's very important that you find a good shir, a good chavrusa, something that will obligate you every week you go there. If you find a good shul where you enjoy the shir, good. If not, find a shir that's not connected to a shul. It could be you daven in one shul because they daven your nusach, but there's a different shul where you enjoy the shirim, go there. You don't have to daven there. You go there for the shir. But Chazal wanted us Shabbos afternoon to go out and learn. Now we're going to switch the clock in 2 weeks. Shabbat afternoon is going to be much longer. It's so important that we take advantage of that time. Most people, when they're in the workforce, you guys are going to move on from Machon Meir. When are you going to learn? So you should learn every day. You should have a shir you go to every day. A chavrusa you have every day. However, you should also have Shabbos. And try to find a shir which you connect to. And that's why Chazal forbade certain books. They said, don't read them on Shabbos afternoon. Now, today, we don't have that prohibition, really. It's mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. But today, who opens a Daniel, unfortunately? Right? People should open a Daniel. So coming back to our Mishnah, the Mishnah says, even if it's a book that you don't ordinarily read from on Shabbat afternoon, it's one of those books which the sages told you don't read from it on Shabbat, nonetheless, you have to save it from the fire. So that's what the Mishnah just said. We save holy books from a fire, even on Shabbat, even if I have to take it out to the Mavui, right? We saw what a Mavui is, that dead-end street. And even if I can't read from that book on Shabbat, v'afalpi shektuvin b'chol lashon, and even if it's written in all kinds of languages, doesn't matter what language it's written in, even though it could be that, we'll see, I don't know if we'll get to it, there are opinions that say that you cannot read publicly from books unless they're written in Hebrew. So let's say this book is written in Chinese. Does it have the same holiness? The Mishnah says, you make sure it doesn't get burnt, and te'unin geniza. You can't leave it for people to step on. You have to put it in geniza. Geniza means you hide it. Basically, you don't want that it be that Hashem's name be treated irrespectfully or get wiped out. So we bury it, and then whatever happens naturally happens. That's called gniza, what we call in Yiddish, shemis. Ah, yafe.
But Rabbi, just one thing I understand from the beginning, making sure it doesn't get burned, what's this about? Is this about when you don't have an area? But is that what
two opinions about whether it's speaking where there was no Erev on the Mavui, or it's talking about
holy book being burned.
Right, or it's talking about that it's going to require a lot of work. You have this whole bookcase to move out.
Right.
So you're going to spend your Shabbos sweating and taking these books out.
And there's certain risks to yourself.
No, Chazal didn't tell you to take risks
right.
to your own safety, but...
So why wouldn't you, other than the fact that it's a question of Erev?
One of two things. Either the Mishnah is talking about there was no Erev there in the Mavui, or the Mishnah is talking about that you're going to end up working all of Shabbos, so...
I see, it's not just a one-two thing where you go out there, it's a long process.
You're going to work all afternoon taking out the books, so you are actively... making your Shabbos not pleasant. Whereas if the fire got to the books, you didn't do anything. It happened on its own. The Mishnah says, doesn't matter, you have to save the books.
Sound like an extension of the Torah scroll. I mean,
yeah.
Be a
yeah. Okay.
You're never going to exert yourself for something.
I hear. The problem is on Shabbos, you're not supposed to sweat. So you might have thought, I'm
no, that's a good point.
That's what the Mishnah is pointing out. Two interpretations, we'll see that.
Okay.
Why wouldn't you read these books on Shabbat? Because every Shabbat afternoon they had a set time to learn, and Chazal were concerned that if people were reading these books, you would end up annulling the Beit Midrash. Amar Rabbi Yossi. We start the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah was Rabbi Yossi bar Chalafta. His father's name was Rabbi Chalafta, and he was the rabbi in Tzipori. And then Rabbi Yossi emigrated, probably to Jerusalem. And then when Rabbi Yossi was silent, as Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai berated the Romans, so the Romans heard of it, and the Romans said, if you were silent when Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was berating us, so you should be banished back to Tzipori. So he was sent back to Tzipori. Amar Rabbi Yossi. So now Rabbi Yossi tells us the following. Maaseh be'aba chalafta. The following story happened to my father, chalafta. Shehalach etzel Rabban Gamliel beribi. He went to Rabban Gamliel, the big rabbi, Litveria to Tiberias, right? Umetzosha yosheva shulchano shel Yochanan HaNazuf. He found him sitting by Yochanan HaNazuf, whatever Nazuf means. Uviado sefer Yov Targum v'ukorebo. And he was holding a book of Job, and it was written in translation, and he was reading it. Amar lo, and he said to him, Zachur ani b'Rabban Gamliel avi avicha, I remember Rabban Gamliel, your grandfather, Shaya omed al gav ha'ma'ala b'Har HaBayit, he was standing on Har HaBayit, on one of the steps, ve'viu lo sefer Yov Targum, and they brought him a book of Job that was translated, that wasn't in original Hebrew. V'amar labanai, and he said to the builder, Shak'eu tachat anidbach, put it under the layers of the building. Afutziva laviganzo. So once he heard that, Rabban Gamliel said, put it away. We shouldn't have a translation. So this is the big question on Art Scroll. You see, Rabban Gamliel said, we don't leave around translations of Tanakh. He told them to bury it. So one day we'll have to learn this. But this is the Gemara we see. Our Mishnah mentioned reading a translated version of Tanakh, and the Gemara over here says that Rabbi Yossi quoted the story that his father, Chalafta, told Rabban Gamliel that his grandfather, Rabban Gamliel's grandfather, had ordered to have translations of Tanakh buried when he came across them.
Does that depend, you think, on the time period that they're in and what people need and what are the dangers of it being, you know, taken out there and used against Jews and Judaism?
I don't think so. We'll learn, if you want, remind me. We'll get back to it. That's a separate subject.
A lot of things in what you're saying tonight are strange. You know, the idea that the basket that you could a cow could chew it and it could conceivably come out whole is a full blown miracle.
No, it depends on what they did to their baskets. It depends on how big a basket and what they did to the basket.
Swallow it.
Imagine a basket that's made for a person's ring. Imagine a basket. Imagine a basket that was coated with something, tannic acid or something. Saying it doesn't have to be a big basket. They gave a name which basket they were talking about, but I don't know, you know, what that type of basket was.
And it's ironic that the Book of Daniel or something would be so enthralling and engrossing that they're afraid the people would stay home and read it. And today, when you can't read it, who does?
Yeah.
You have to say you can't, like you said.
Yeah. Now we move on to another big subject. If you said tonight was unique subjects, we have another one coming right up. Habrachot. If a person has the blessings written, what's that? That's what we call today a siddur. Okay, he has a written version of the blessings, which was Chazal's way of talking about a sidur. The hakamein. What is a kamea? So they would take a piece of scroll and they would write on it a verse. Hashem says, Kol ha-machala she-samti v'mitzrayim lo asim alecha. All illness that was in Egypt, I won't put upon you. And then they wrap it up in a leather hide, and a person wears it like a piece of jewelry around their neck, and then the people believe that that would protect them. Now, there are still people who wear cameo today. Maybe they work. The Mishnayos later on speak about being an expert kameh rider, and that there were people who had cured them. So maybe when we get there, we'll have to see what Rambam writes on it, etc. Afalpi sheyesh bem otiyot shel shem, even though you have over there the letters of Hashem's name, umeinyan notar b'shebatorah, you have in the kameh all kinds of concepts from Torah. You have verses from Torah. You have the verse Lo tirami pachad laila, you won't have to fear from the night, etc. So even though they have all of this, en metzilino tan mipnei adleika, you don't save them when there's a fire. We just learned you save all the books of Torah. What about if I have to take a kameya? What about if I have to take out a sidur? So a sidur is a bad example, because they weren't talking about a full-blown sidur. Our sidur has kriyat shema in it. It has verses of Torah. It has whole sections of Torah. A birkon, right. That would be a good example. So then you don't save it from a fire when it involves either a lot of work or taking it out where there's no Erev in that mavui. Ela nislafin mimkoman. They're left to burn. If there's a fire, hen v'azkirotehen, they, and what? And Hashem's name that's mentioned there. Mikan amru, from here our sages taught, kotvei brachot kesofei Torah. People who write these different blessings, so it's as though they're burning Torah. Because ultimately, these things will get destroyed. And that's part of the problem with people putting on their business card different psukim. So people sometimes put tefillat haderech, but they put Hashem's name there. Imagine a caterer. This was a shaila I got once. A person was a caterer, and he had business cards printed, and on the other side of the business card he had, I think, either bracha mein shalosh alamichya or tefillat haderech. And by mistake, in one place, he left Hashem's name, the printer. So he gets his printed business cards, and then he asks, can I leave them on the table at the events? What happens to most of the business cards on the table? They get thrown out, they get spilled on, they get really, really destroyed. 1 in 100 people take home and actually give them business. Right. 1 in 100, 2 in 100, but most of them get destroyed. So I asked my teachers, and they said he's not allowed to use those business cards. That's this Gemara. That when Hashem's name is written on a blessing, and when you know it's going to get destroyed, that's a desecration of Hashem's name. There was a man who was in the city of Tzaidan, and he was writing all these different blessings for people. So they came, they told Rabbi Ishmael what was going on. Rabbi Ishmael went to check him out. Is it true that he's writing these blessings for people? When Rabbi Ishmael was climbing up the ladder to visit this guy's workshop, so he sensed, oh boy, the rabbi is coming to check what I'm doing. He took, he had a batch of blessings that he had written, and he took all the scrolls and put them in. He had a jug of water there. Now, ink erases in water, so he stuck it all into the water so that when the chief rabbi walks in, he won't see any of the writing of the blessings that he had written with Hashem's name. And Rabbi Ishmael said to him the following. He said these words, Gadol onesh ha'acharon min harishon. You're going to be more punished for what you did in the end than what you did in the beginning. He said, in the end, you purposely took a God's name that was written on those scrolls and erased it. That's much worse than what you did in the beginning. The whole idea of not writing Hashem's name is that it might end up being desecrated. And here he did it directly. Okay, so with that, what did we learn so far? Let's review. We learned about how their houses were set up in their yards and their public domain and their mavut. We learned about carrying scrolls. Doesn't matter what language, doesn't matter what book, because they have to be buried, they shouldn't be burnt. We learned about the idea that there were certain scrolls Chazal didn't want us reading because we shouldn't miss the learning Shabbat afternoon, and that those speeches were very important. And then we went on a tangent of two ideas. Number one, that it's important for you guys to make sure you have learning in your life, and sometimes that means on Shabbat getting a good shiur. And then we went off on the tangent, the Gemara story about Rav Ida Bar Abba and Rav, who was the Rav who came in, Rav Dimi from the city of Nahardo, and how he insulted him, and Rav Yosef told Rav Dimi, Hashem should avenge your affliction. And the other stories, including the speech giver on Shabbos, who everyone wasn't sure if they were the ones who had caused Rav Dimi's untimely passing. And all of them were upset about it. No one was happy to have been the one to have caused Rav Ida's untimely passing. Then we learned the idea of Rabbi Yossi, that Rabbi Yossi told us the story that when his father Chalafta went to Rabbi Gamliel, the young Rabbi Gamliel, so he saw a book of Job translated, and he told him, Chalafta, Rabbi Chalafta, Rabbi Yossi's father, told Rabbi Gamliel, I remember your grandfather, Rabbi Gamliel, that when he saw a book of Job translated, he ordered it buried. And so they buried that book as well. And then we spoke about the blessings and the kameot, that even though they have Hashem's name, they don't get saved from a fire. However, if it's not a fire, if we have the ability to bury them in general, so we do. And that's why Chazal did not want us writing these things. Chazal said that ultimately causes them to be disgraced Hashem's name. That's one of the reasons that they don't write Hashem's name on contracts and on piece of paper. People write Basad, B'siyata Dishmaya. Why don't they write Baruch Hei, Baruch Hashem? Why don't they write Bezrat Hashem? We don't want to write Hashem's name, because what's going to happen to that paper in an hour? People are going to step on it. So we're careful to write Basad. Basad is an acronym for B'siyata Dishmaya. I hope I have the assistance of heaven in what I'm about to do. That's this idea. You don't want to write Hashem's name where it will be destroyed. Rav Kook is famous for his opinion that writing even just a hey is something that has holiness. When you write the letter hey to represent Hashem's name, Rav Kook held that was not the right way to do it. You should write the letter Dalet. That's what's quoted in his name. And then we saw the story of Rabbi Yishmael, where the man who was writing blessings quickly erased all the blessings, and Rabbi Yishmael understood what had happened. He told him he'll be more punished for the last thing he did, erasing Hashem's name, than the first thing. And now we will begin Bezrat Hashem next week. The Gemara will analyze Vayhi bin Soa Aharon, why the Parsha Vayhi bin Soa Aharon has upside down nuns, one before it and one after it.